Introduce yourself.
I'm Jason. I'm the lead singer of Lifehouse.
And also the main songwriter, right?
Yeah, I write most of the stuff.
How do you guys write, actually? I was wondering.
Usually, my writing style kind of varies every time. You know, sometimes I'll have a lyric that I want to write a song about. Sometimes I'll have a melody in my head. Sometimes I'll have some guitar chords that I've discovered that I kind of think are unique or different. But it's different every time, you know. But some songs take 5 years to write, and some songs take 5 minutes to write, you know. It's kind of, there's no formula to it.
No kidding, because, if you write songs like this, they sound so thought over.
Yeah, it's so funny because that song was the least thought over that I've ever written before. You know, it was almost like the song kind of wrote itself in a way. Or at first I thought that I was ripping someone off, like, man, this sounds so familiar, you know. But then they say that, you know, I read a story that Paul McCartney, when he wrote Yesterday, that he thought that he was ripping someone off, you know, but no one ever found the song, you know. So sometimes they're just like floating around out there waiting to be tapped into, you know.
So then you also must have heard about the story that he was actually standing in the kitchen miming a song about scrambled eggs.
Yeah, exactly.
So you didn't know the lyrics yet.
Yeah. It's so funny. It's like you never know when something's going to come up.
But does it work for you too? I mean, you have a melody in your head that you're going to sing, but you don't have the words yet, so you babble on a little.
You know, one thing that I started doing recently was I would take a mini cassette recorder and just sing like random gibberish. And sometimes you can listen back to that sometimes and you can translate what you're saying and it actually makes sense, you know. So it's like translating this weird songwriter language sometimes, you know. So that's what I've been doing recently when I can't find a lyric, is I'll just freestyle and just pick out words or sounds that kind of sound like a certain word and then put the thoughts together. It's like kind of going on a treasure hunt or something.
You have to keep those tapes because you'll probably issue them 20 years from now.
Yeah, exactly.
It'll be worth a lot of money.
Definitely.
Hey, people at home don't know too much about you guys yet. When did you guys start it off, actually?
We started the band about 5 years ago, me and the bass player, and we went through a couple changes in the band. We had a drummer that came for 4 years and that recently quit, and so we brought a new guy in, and we just became really good friends with this guy and really gelled musically. And so right now there's just three people in the band. It's a three-piece with a hired extra guitar player. So we're eventually going to look to bring a fourth member in when we find the right one that plays guitar, you know.
No kidding, fourth member.
Yeah, you know, I think that our music needs another guitar player, you know, to kind of reduplicate what we've made on the record. So right now we're just going to use a hired guy, but for the future we're kind of looking to see if the right guy shows up, we'll add a fourth member.
So who will be the right guy? What sort of person does he have to be? I mean, you're in the band because you like to work with friends or because you are a professional musician?
It has to be both, you know. It's one of those things where our biggest mistake was bringing people into the band that were our friends that weren't good, you know. So first of all, you know, obviously you need to have some connection with them personality-wise, and because it's hard to live with someone on the road, you know what I mean? So you have to be friends. But second of all, you have to be good, you know what I mean? So it's like one of those things where we're going to keep trying out guitar players and we'll know when we have the right one, you know.
But I mean, the more popular you get, the harder it will be to find the right one, I guess.
Yeah, definitely.
Because people want to join for the wrong reasons.
Yeah, but I think that only time will tell that. And by bringing him in, first of all, as just a hired gun, you kind of see what kind of person he is, you know what I mean?
So you don't like the hired gun you have now?
No, we like him, but he's kind of an interesting case because he's been with us for 8 months since we've started touring, and he has hopes of his own band back home taking off, and he's a writer himself, so he doesn't really fit the mold of just a guitar player. He kind of does what I do in a different band, so it doesn't really work for two of us.
So you don't want to team up with him? I mean, double talent would like...
He doesn't really want to do anything like that. He's more into his own vibe and his own thing, and this is a different style for him. His stuff is more... just different, you know. It's more underground, you know. My stuff is more in the mainstream.
So what sort of music do you like?
I love the Beatles. The Beatles are probably my all-time favorite. I love U2. I love the band Live. I like artists like Elliott Smith and Jeff Buckley. I'm really drawn to singer-songwriters, and if they're in a rock band, it's even a bonus, you know.
So you're probably the first person I talk to who has his cat being stolen and eaten.
Yeah, I actually lived in Hong Kong for 3 years, and I just remember this lady always like eyeing our cat, you know. And one day our cat disappeared, and I don't know if it was because she resented us or because you know she was just hungry, one or the other. But she definitely she fessed up to it a couple months later that she was the one that ate the cat.
So exciting times. Not.
Yeah, exactly. No kidding. I was glad to come home to America. But one good thing about that is you really appreciate living a middle class American lifestyle, you know, and having things that a lot of people in the rest of the world don't have. It makes you appreciate it more.
So it must bore you to death that a lot of people compare you to other singers.
It does and it doesn't. You know, I would say that it does, but then I'd be a hypocrite because I compare new bands to other singers that I like all the time, you know. But I just think that people need to do that to figure out whether they like you or not. If they're comparing you to a band they like, I think that's a good thing. You know, if they're comparing you to a band that they hate, it's not a good thing. So luckily people have been comparing us from everyone to Live, to Pearl Jam, to Creed, you know. So those are bands that pretty much everyone likes, you know. So eventually I feel like we're developing our own sound and that people will realize that our thing is unique in what we do. And then it just seems like if we establish ourselves, a new band will come along, then they'll compare us to us. You know, it's just like the same thing happened to us with Creed and Pearl Jam, because Creed came out, they compared them to Pearl Jam. When we came out, they compared us to Creed. So it's kind of like the second degree Pearl Jam syndrome.
I mean, isn't it strange for you? I mean, you start off a band, you start singing, you start making songs that you really like, and suddenly you have a record which does really well. And then most of a sudden, the whole world has an opinion about you.
Yeah, I mean, that's it's hard and it's good at the same time. You know, the people that like you, it's obviously good to hear that people are into your music, but it seems like a lot of the time you just kind of have to separate yourself from it because the good always cancels out the bad, you know what I mean? And it's like if you get so depressed about people not liking you, you don't enjoy the good, you know? So I just try to stay out of it as much as possible and just, like, make my music, and it's there for the people that like it, you know?
You guys are all pretty young, starting off in a band. You're here in the music business. Pretty tricky business.
Yeah, the music business is very tricky, and it's very deceptive too, you know, because it's like, I think that the biggest deception that artists get is that the labels are their friends, you know, and all of a sudden they're not selling records and the record company isn't returning phone calls, you know. So it's like when you're doing good, everyone loves you and everyone, but it is a business and it is to make money, you know, so you really have to be level-headed and grounded. And the fact that you basically need to make it happen yourself. That's why touring is very important, you know, and getting your fan base. Because when the record company isn't there for you, your fans will be, you know. So it's really important to realize who are your friends.
A lot of bands before you guys have tried to conquer Europe, like the bands which are still pretty big in the States, like you mentioned Creed or Matchbox 20 or even Bush. They're big in the States, but they're like average Joe in Europe.
Yeah, I think that a lot of bands from America make the mistake of not really touring Europe that often or going here once, and they make it so big in the States they're not willing to start over from the ground again, you know. And I think in our case we're really excited to keep coming back over here. And
even if you have to play small places.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with playing small places at all. I enjoy it, if anything. You know, I think that it's more of an intimate setting where people feel like they can get to know you better, you know. And then as it grows, the natural growing process starts becoming more fun because those people all of a sudden have been to 5 of your shows and they're bringing friends, and then it just kind of grows naturally.
Hey, you guys toured with a lot of great bands.
Yeah, we toured with Pearl Jam for 3 months. We played some shows with Green Day. We traveled with Everclear and Matchbox 20 for a little while. We played a show with Aerosmith, and so it's,
no kidding.
Yeah, we played all these really
Aerosmith. How was that?
It was amazing. It was.
You like that? Because I mean, your music is, as far as I'm concerned, a little different.
Oh, it's way different. You know, our stuff is a little younger than their stuff, but they're
a little.
Yeah, they're legends in my mind. You know what I mean? But one of my
dreams. Be your grandpa.
Yeah, I know. He looks great for being that old, though. But one of my dreams is to tour with U2 and be the opening slot for that. I think that would be amazing.
Actually, I just did an interview with Stereo MCs, and they were like, well, we used to open up for U2, which is a drag. I was like, why? They're like, well, you have to open for a band that everybody wants to see, and you get like half an hour to warm up a crowd that's really not interested in you.
Yeah, I think my main thing would just be to get to see them live every night, you know, and if I got to play, that'd be a bonus, you know. Maybe I'd just tour like and be a groupie, just a roadie guy or something, you know.
Hey, why did you guys set off making music, actually? Especially you, because, I mean, the band pretty much evolves around you, right?
Yeah, I think that most of the music came from a place where my parents split up when I was 12, and that got me going writing lyrics and kind of getting out what I couldn't communicate to people at the time through my music. So I was basically communicating through a song, you know.
Is that true? Because, I mean, you probably would have made music even if your parents were still together, I guess, right?
Well, all I know is that my main interest came all of a sudden when they divorced, so that's when I pinpoint the time to. I'm not sure whether I would have done that, or even before then I was really big into martial arts. I used to compete and do like that like, I remember every day practicing for like 6 hours and competing every weekend and getting trophies and stuff. And so when my parents split up and I moved, I lost all interest in that and got more kind of introverted and
started doing drugs.
No, not really. You know, music was my drugs. You know, I needed a guitar around me at all time and I needed to write lyrics, you know, so it was kind of how I dealt with things.
So you dropped all the martial arts stuff.
Yeah, I haven't done it since. I dropped it when I was, about 14.
So you don't want to do it anymore?
Not really. You know, it's like when you haven't done it for that long, you start losing flexibility and stuff, and you can't do the splits anymore. You can't kick high, and so I just kind of gave it up.
So you actually were pretty good.
Yeah, I went to the state championships twice for a couple matches, and I competed in like weapons and full contact fighting. I had a lot of different interest in it. You know, so I thought,
weapons as well.
Yeah. You don't fight with the weapons, but you do the whole form and a whole like presentation. And so I kind of lost interest in that. You know, when I started playing guitar.
So Karate Kid turned Paul McCartney.
Yeah, exactly. Or Elvis. Or the opposite, you know.
Elvis did karate, of course.
Yeah, I know.
Hey, this album must be pretty old for you now, right?
I've been writing a lot of newer stuff, you know, and it's fun to play it live, but at the same time, especially when you have that one hit on the radio, at least in America, people come up and they go, oh, I like that song you sing. And it's like, it's kind of not offending, but it's like, man, you just want other people to hear more of your music than that one song, because that represents all of your music. And I feel like there's so many more songs that are better than some of the stuff on the record for the newer record, just because the growing process is still happening and we're still developing our sound and still developing the songs. And so I'm really looking forward to getting back in the studio.
How important is success for you?
I think that success is all in your mind, really. You know, I think success is if you're happy. You know, I mean, I've seen a lot of really miserable rich people and famous people, and I've seen a lot of happy homeless people with nothing. You know, so I think that it's all based on inside of you versus your outside circumstances. You know, because I don't feel any different now than I did, you know, 6 months ago before the record was released, you know. So I feel like if you base your happiness on success or what your view of success is, you're kind of going to be dictated and you're going to be very moody and up and down, you know. But if you're like content with where you're at and what you have, I feel like it's easier to be happy.
Of course, but I mean, it's better to play in front of like 60,000 people than to be in Hong Kong with a neighbor who's eating your cat.
Absolutely. But I mean, if I had a guitar in Hong Kong, I'd still be happy, you know, as long as I get to keep...
Even without your cat.
Yeah, exactly. I haven't had a cat since.
It probably tastes good.
Yeah, I don't want to find out.
It's like chicken, probably. Anyway, exactly. Hanging by a Moment is starting to get to be a hit here as well.
Oh, wow. It's Hanging by a Moment is just one of those songs that it's easy listening, you know what I mean? It's like the first time you hear it, it seems like people respond to it the first time, instead of like some songs, at least for me, it takes two or three listens to get used to. And sometimes radio stations don't give you that opportunity. They'll play it once and want feedback immediately, and that's how you really know what a hit is, you know. But at the time, I wasn't writing it going, yeah, I wrote a hit. You have no idea until afterwards, you know. So I'm just really excited that people are responding to it, you know, and really connecting with it.
Yeah, I heard you guys started playing off in a church.
Yeah, we actually had like a youth group band, and we played in Malibu in front of like, let's see, like 50 kids that we probably sucked, and they like stuck around anyway just because they had to, really, you know. But
so was it like Christian rock, or how should I see that?
No, it was. I called it church rock. You know, you play basically other people's music and stuff, and then from that I started writing these songs and developing them outside into a rehearsal studio, and then we started playing colleges and kind of developing some of the stuff that you heard on the record that didn't really fit inside of that genre of music. So we kind of took it out. So that's where we didn't sign to a Christian label, but we signed to a mainstream label and got the opportunity to reach as many people as possible, you know.
Is Lifehouse a religious band, actually?
It's not a religious band, you know. I don't even like the word religious, you know. When my parents split up, we were raised Christian, obviously, you know. So I had a real problem with how hypocritical some of the stuff seemed, you know. I got to see the inside out, all the skeletons where a lot of people get to kind of miss. I was right in the middle of it and saw a lot of hypocrisy. So I kind of had to make up my mind and pick and choose the bones out of what was truth and reality and what was false, you know. And so I view myself as a spiritual person, but I'm very non-judgmental towards other people, and I feel like a lot of the church is about judging and about telling who's going to hell and who's not, and I think that people should just love, you know, so that's what our band's mostly about, you know.
That's special that you think that, because, I mean, you could also, like, go totally the other way and be a fan of Satan or Slayer or whatever and turn into a black metal band.
Yeah, we could turn into a Marilyn Manson, for all I know, you know, yeah. But it's all how you deal with your situation. You know, you could take a negative situation and make it positive, or you can, you know, dwell on the negativity. And we kind of chose to move on and look more towards the positive side of things.
So why is love so important for you?
Why is what?
Love so important for you?
I think love's a universal theme, you know? It's like the Beatles coined the whole love is all you need thing, you know? And I think that that's probably why they're still one of the biggest bands in the world. They just sang about, you know, happiness and love. And I feel like that's something that, even though a lot of people don't firsthand experience, everyone can relate to, because it's just built into human nature, you know?
Yeah, of course, you've also seen, like, the way those songs worked on people.
Yeah.
The Beatles had, of course, a lot of female fans.
Yeah.
You're probably sporting, well, or being portrayed as the face of the group now.
Yeah.
Doesn't it affect you?
It's not really my personality, to be honest with you. I'd more so rather sit in the back and kind of let other people take the credit versus being the guy up front. But it's just kind of, I got thrown into it, so I kind of have to take that role, you know. But
so what happens now? Because, I mean, all the pictures, you're up front.
Yeah, I mean, it's just one of those things where you kind of, you never really get used to it. You know, when people come up to you and ask for your autograph or something, or know your name and know all about you, it's just kind of a weird feeling, you know what I mean? But it's just, I look at it like, at least they're connecting to the music, you know, and at least they're into it, and at least that it's helping them in a way, you know.
I also heard you're a big fan of Kurt Cobain.
Yeah, love Kurt Cobain. I think that he's probably one of the most genuine artists of his time, you know, and I really believe that he revolutionized the industry when it was at a really kind of a fake low, and he came out and he wasn't pretending to be anything that he wasn't. You know, I really admire that, and I think that a lot of newer bands have a lot to learn even from what he did, and just how transparent and honest and open his music was.
What did you learn?
I learned just, you know, to be myself. You know, one thing that I saw that he never did was he never let anyone tell him who he was, but he was always just upfront, and he wouldn't let anyone change him, you know. And I feel like taking that attitude in this business, you have everyone and their mom telling you what to do and what to become and who you are, but if you have a strong identity and figure that out before you get into it, you kind of remain untainted by it, you know.
A lot of people thought he was an asshole for that.
Yeah, you know, but a lot of people also, he freed up by that, you know. I think that that's why the whole generation chose him to be the leader of it, you know, because he was very genuine.
So you guys are genuine?
Yeah, I'd like to think of us as genuine, and even more than genuine, just honest, you know. I mean, we're just not pretending to have all the answers or be anything that we're not, but we're playing music and putting out a positive message, you know.
There was this big discussion on the Rolling Stone side, in the magazine Rolling Stone, of a lot of people who were like, yeah, and then you have those bands like Bush and Creed and Lifehouse, and they're all like copying the Nirvana vibe, and they're fake, and let's stick to the real thing.
I think that's cool, because finally we're not getting compared to Pearl Jam. You know, it's like we've gotten, because everyone thinks my voice sounds like Eddie Vedder, so that's fine.
You want to sing in another way then? I mean, if people say that to you, like, well, let's sing like Barry Manilow. Or
I can't help it, honestly. It's like my voice does what it does, and I never did try to force it. You know, as it developed and grew, most of my influences, you know, it's like I didn't start sounding like John Lennon all of a sudden. You know, my voice is what it is, even though they're my biggest influence. But it's one of those things where you just have to stick around and prove that you have more music besides the one-hit wonder mentality, you know.
Did you meet Pearl Jam yet?
No, I haven't met him yet. We toured with
him. Opened the door, though, right?
No, we toured with him, and we still didn't get to meet him. It's one of those crazy things.
Would you like to?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think Eddie Vedder is amazing. He's like my only link to Kurt Cobain now, because I look at them in the same genre and the same kind of time period and stuff. But he's an amazing songwriter and singer.
You guys are from Seattle. Is there anything left of the Seattle vibe?
I don't think so. You know, Kurt Cobain, when he has that picture of him wearing the Grunge is Dead shirt, that's pretty much it. You know, it's like, but I believe that sprung a new generation of bands that kind of can go out and kind of take what they did and make it different and make it their own. You know?
Like yourself.
Yeah, I guess so. You know, they're a big influence and inspiration. You know, even though I'm a big fan of bands like Coldplay and Travis and some of the mellower stuff, you might see some of the stuff on the new record being more like that and being more Beatlesque than the heavier, edgier sound. But that was really where we were at the time, and really was the right attitude to kind of reflect some of this moodier music I was writing.
The Beatles were, of course, totally experimental as well. They did really weird stuff, especially if you put it in their time.
Yeah.
Would you care to experiment like they did?
Absolutely. Some of the newer stuff that I'm writing, I really want to get creative with, like, some orchestral arrangements and stuff that I feel that could really complement some of these slower ballads that I'm writing that are more than just emotional ballads, but more complex musically, you know. So I'd like to experiment with sounds and stuff. But it's really cool because our producer is very, very creative. So he likes to use different instruments like banjos and tweak them with weird sounds and stuff. And one of the tracks on the record, he went and got a big pile of lettuce, and instead of using a snare hit, he would crack the lettuce and then he sampled it. So he likes doing weird stuff like that, making sounds and stuff. So we make a pretty good team when we get into that mode of trying to create weird sounds from things he usually wouldn't do.
Don't get me wrong, there's lettuce on this album?
Yeah, on the song Quasimodo, on the every snare hit, there's a cracking lettuce sound that sounds like a snare with a snare, so it's one of those weird things. You have to go listen to it.
So you don't need all the expensive stuff, people. You can use lettuce at home.
Yeah, lettuce in pots and pans. It's so funny. One time I walked into the studio, and he's such an eccentric guy. He's like a scientist. You know, he had chains all wrapped around his body with pots and pans, and then he would just jump up and down and make it a big rattling noise to make it sound percussive, like with the beat. It was so funny. It was just the funniest thing I've ever seen.
You guys recorded at home as well, right?
Yeah, we recorded at his house, you know, so we had all the lettuce and pots and pans we needed.
Could you ever imagine that you would be as big as you are now?
Not really. You know, for me, it was one of those things where I hope for the best, obviously, but I was really prepared to go and create my own fan base and not rely on radio or record sales, but really just play live, you know, and so luckily the song picked up on the radio and the record started selling, so it just kind of took on a life of its own, you know. But I think that's really one of the benefits of making honest, genuine music, is it seems like people really respond to it, you know. It's like when they find that there's something real about it, I think that's why people love Pearl Jam and they love Nirvana, is because their songs are real and they're real, you know. So I just think that that's something that we can really learn from.
Cool. Thanks a lot.
No problem.